to know. Because the Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like as not, a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you?
Never mind.
Yeah, did you ever think about that back there in Little Rock, Arkansas, when we let the gates open? What could have been stopped in Little Rock, Arkansas? They didn't do it, and that was the beginning of the end. This is Terrible Tommy, White Aryan Resistance here in North Central Indiana. Send your donations to The Bunker, P.O. Box 401. Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Then go up to resist.com and get an education. You can't be a really good lone wolf unless you have a lone wolf education. And the only place you're going to get a centralized lone wolf education is at resist.com. You can go to a lot of other places and you hear a lot of right-wing racial dribble that takes you off into the weeds, to where you don't really get the story. Or you can get it all on one website, resist.com. Our dues, our donations are $20 a month for the radio show, and it's time for our associates to get their donations in, and I appreciate that. Well, let's get on to it. It's Tuesday. It's the 1st of September. How about that? Here we go, almost the last day of summer. And now we're starting to look forward to global warming and snow and bad things. But Mother Nature loves us. Well, the Black KKK is struck again in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's only about 45-minute drive from where I'm at right now. Yeah, the Black KKK did away with 3 Negroes. Different places, too. Not all in one spot. They didn't just drive by and shoot 3 Negroes. These are 3 separate murders in one night in what I would call a relatively small place. A regional town. Well, I told you the other day about the Israeli intellectual scientific community that's bringing a lot of things out that you're not being told about, especially about the fallacies and the nonsense of the Holy Bible. Yeah. So I told you about the Exodus from the evil Egyptians, that either is very much exaggerated or it didn't happen at all. So I'm going to read it to you, part of it, of what he was talking about. To this day, no pulpit talk by a contemporary American rabbi has generated greater attention or controversy than a sermon delivered by Rabbi David Wolpe on the morning of Passover 2001. The truth, Rabbi Wolpe informed his Los Angeles congregation, is that the way the Bible describes the Exodus from Egypt is not the way it happened, if it happened at all. Beyond dropping a theological bombshell, the sermon ushered in a new era, one of which synagogue-attending Jews could increasingly expect to be confronted with findings of academic study of the Bible. To Rabbi Wolpe, intellectual honesty mandated that, with respect to the Exodus in particular, these findings be not only confronted but embraced. And it is the duty of so-called spiritual leaders, like himself, to help the faithful assimilate them. which was pretty bold, I must say. It's a wonder they didn't hang him right there in the synagogue. In intervening years, thanks no small part to the internet and to ubiquity of social media, exposure to these findings has increased exponentially, much of it focused on one issue. The historicity, or especially the non-historicity, of the biblical Exodus. In, for example, an inaugural essay for thetorah.com, a website devoted to integrating the study of the Torah with the disciplines and findings of academic biblical scholarship, Rabbi Zev Farber declared categorically that given the data to which modern historians have access, it is impossible to regard the accounts of mass exodus from Egypt or the wilderness experience as historical. In other words, it didn't happen. Well, if there had been one, we could always say, you know, the niggers say that they built the pyramids and the niggers were all the pharaohs and everything. So we could have said, well, the dirty niggers are anti-Semitic and they imprisoned and enslaved the kikes. but since none of it's the truth, we can't get away with that. One might be tempted to ask, what's the big deal? For some, indeed, there is none. To admit there never was an Exodus is a matter of simple honesty and need have little or any deleterious effect on one's appreciation of his Judaism. To the contrary, Bible stories, we are told, speak to us in symbolic terms. Yeah, right. God's voice is in the message of the Exodus story, not in its supposed facts, and that message, once shorn of its mythological baggage, is only strengthened. Well, since there is no God, there certainly isn't any Hebrew God, forget about that. For others, however, excising the Exodus from Judaism undercuts Judaism itself. Right, of course, and Christianity. That's why we got to keep exposing these lies. After all, the biblical rationale for Israel's obligation to God is premised not on his identity as the creator or on his supreme moral authority, but on the fact that the Israelite slaves in Egypt cried out to him from their bondage and he saved them. This is the sole driving force behind the opening line of the Ten Commandments. I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, the house of bondage. On this latter view, were there no Exodus, nearly all of Judaism's sacred text over the centuries would have perpetuated a great lie. Did you hear that, boys and girls? On this latter view, were there no Exodus, nearly all of Judaism's sacred text that Christians read every day over the centuries would have perpetuated a great lie. And we know Jews are great at lying. In response to the question posed by the child at the Seder meal, how is this night different from all other nights? The father would obligingly say, really, my child, there are no differences. Well, anyhow, let's go on down here. You get into that Judaism slop, it's just like the Christian slop. The case against the historicity of the Exodus is straightforward, and is its essence can be stated in five words: a sustained lack of evidence. Well, that's what I found when I was in Israel on a tour, on a Christian tour, and they kept taking me around to where all these miraculous miracles and everything was supposed to have happened. And the tour guide even admitted, well, we have no proof of this, but we think this is what happened here, or we think this is what happened there, but we have no evidence. Now, if you want to know about the evidence of Rome and Israel, it's all over the place. They got the Tiberius and all these cities over there that the ruins are still there. So we know they were there, and we know what they did. Nowhere in the written record of ancient Egypt is there any explicit mention of Hebrew or Israelite slaves, let alone a figure named Moses. That's because Moses is a myth that came out of Babylon, and his name was Mises in Babylon. And this was just another one of these fictitious mythological people. But the Israelites, or the Jews, turned him into a real person. There is no mention of the Nile waters turning into blood, or any series of plagues matching those in the Bible, or of the defeat of any Pharaoh on the scale suggested by the Torah's narrative of the mass drowning of Egyptian forces at the sea. You know, that's something about the Jews. They write such fantastic stories that anybody with the brain should question them. It took me quite a while to question this stuff. And sometimes that makes me wonder about myself. Furthermore, the Torah states that 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60 left Egypt. Adding women, children, and the elderly, we arrive at a population in the vicinity of 2 million souls. There is no archaeological or other evidence of an ancient encampment that size anywhere in the Sinai Desert, nor is there any evidence of so great a subsequent influx into the land of Israel at any time. No competent scholar or archaeologist will deny these facts. Case closed, then. For those who would defend the plausibility of a historical exodus, what possible response can there be? Well, let's begin with the missing evidence of the Hebrews' existence in the Egyptian records. You know, something as big as that would be in the Egyptians' history books or history tablets. It is true enough that these records do not contain clear and unambiguous references to Hebrews or Israelites, but that it's hardly surprising. The Egyptians referred to all of their West Semitic slaves simply as Asiatics. Well, that's the basis of Jewry, Asiatics, with no distinction among the groups, just as slaveholders in the New World never identified their black slaves by their specific providence in Africa. More generally, there is a limit to what we can expect from the written record of ancient Egypt. 99% of the papyri produced there during the period in question has been lost, and none whatsoever has survived from the eastern Nile Delta, the region where the Torah claims the Hebrew slaves resided. Instead, we have to rely on monumental inscriptions. Well, that's sure a lot more dependable than these preachers, which being mainly reports of to the gods about royal achievements, as far from complete or reliable as historical records. They're more akin to the modern-day resumes and just as conspicuous for their failure to note setbacks of any kind. Well, he goes on and on. It's a big, long article I downloaded, about 25 or 30 pages of it. Wasted a lot of ink. Not really, but anyhow, there's a lot more here. But of course, they go crazy trying to refute it by mythical means, which you can't go by mythical means. I mean, sometimes it'll point you in the right direction, but the Jews are desperate to hold on because they know what's going to happen when all of these different miracles and things that were supposed to have happened are proven couldn't have happened or didn't happen. What are they going to have left? They're going to have nothing left. Nothing. That's why the Holocaust, so-called Holocaust, is so suspect by so many people around the world in growing numbers of saying this is an exaggeration. And there's a lot more to it. Because the Jews have traditionally, down through history, bragged and boasted about these great things. Now, when I was on this tour with the Christians on their little tour bus, I told you before, there was one guy on the bus that it's sort of funny. He was a little bit off wonk. I wouldn't say he was retarded, because he said some very intelligent things. But when he asked the tour guide, you know, I see all these Roman ruins here. I see all those things all over the place. I see the big walls in Jerusalem. But you were supposed to have all these wars over here down through history in ancient times. Thousands of people killed. I have one simple question. The tour guide says, what? He says, where's the bones? You know, bones last a long time. Bones don't just go away in a year, 10 years, or even 100 years. And the tour guide didn't have an answer. He just sort of smiled that Jewish smile and went on to something else. But that's true. If all these great wars that the Israelites fought and all that kind of stuff, and also the murdering of everybody in Canaan, and all the animals and all the people and everything, and all these genocidal things the Jews did, where's the bones? Where are the bones? Well, I'm going to move on to there, because you got the message. Don't trust any of these so-called miracles and great events of the Old Testament. And if you have your kids studying that stuff in Sunday school, you're just screwing their mind up like they screwed mine up for years. So get them out of there. Don't let them suck them into summer Sunday school. That's a big trap to get the kids in. Also, they're going to have all kinds of recreational things. You know, they used to have hay rides, and we'd go on trips to the skating rink and all that just to get the kids. They had to get the kids in to get all the crap and the lies. Because left with just a church, there'd be very few young people go except under pain of death. And that's pretty much what I had to put up with as a kid. You got to go to church. Why, Mom, Dad? Well, because you got to go to church. Yeah, thanks a lot. I could have been out hunting with my dog or riding my bicycle all over the place. A whole lot of things. But I was forced to waste it in a mind control center. But I escaped. I am free. Free at last. Free at last. Now, if you'd like to keep track of some of these kind of stories, they come along every once in a while. Now, here's a place you can get them once in a while. MosaicMagazine.com. MosaicMagazine. MosaicMagazine.com. And that's where I got this one about the Exodus. I look in on several of these Israeli boards and all the time, because every once in a while there's a jewel comes across, more than you'd think. And I have sent you quite a few. But you know what the right wing would say? You know what they'd say? Well, you can't trust anything those Jews say. They never tell the truth. No Jew ever told the truth. And the Christians would say, oh, that's got to be a lie. That's an apostate Jew or something, because they're exposing the fallacies of the Bible, and we know what's causing that. It's the Satan himself. That's what they'd say. So anyhow, but that's one source for these kind of stories. You have to weed through a lot of bullshit, but it's just like the old chicken in the barnyard pecking on the manure pile, pecking through all that shit to get one kernel of corn. Speaking of kernel of corn, guess what happened to me? This morning I dropped by my farm store, decided to pick up a little bit of grain so I could keep the gopher from eating all my bird seed, which is more expensive, and get him onto a diet of corn or something. So I bought a few ears of corn, brought it home, and this is the honest to God truth. I put that ear of corn out on my patio, and an hour later, I looked back and every kernel on that cob was gone. Now, that little gopher is only about 3.5-4 inches long. Can you believe that? That's unbelievable. I don't think a cow could have gone through it that fast. Well, now let's move on to a little bit of Black Ku Klux Klan activity. It's broken out everywhere, and that's good news. You see, remember, bad news to most people is good news to us. And that's logical if you know what we're thinking. And I know what you're thinking. So listen to this. Let's listen to the great reports on the murder rates going on around the country and all the major cities. They said that San Diego didn't have as many, but you see, San Diego is a skip-over point for a majority of Mexicans coming out of Mexico. Now, there's still plenty of Mexicans in San Diego, but they tend to skip over San Diego and go right straight to L.A. and San Francisco and points north is what they do. So I can understand why there isn't quite as many murders in San Diego this year.
L.A., Phoenix, and San Diego have seen declines.
Wait a minute. Didn't get it at the beginning, so let me do this. Here we go.
First half of 2015 is the same period last year. St. Louis, the center of protests against police last year, the figure climbed to 60%. New Orleans, by 30%. Washington, D.C., murder rate up by 18%. New York, by 11%. But the trend isn't uniform. L.A., Phoenix, and San Diego have seen declines in the number of murders in the first half of this year. And then there's discussion as to what exactly accounts for the increase. And is it the result of a slowdown of policing, what some are calling a Ferguson effect? That was The Economist 2 weeks ago. Today, page one, above the fold of the New York Times. Murder rates rising sharply in many cities. Cities across the nation are seeing a startling rise in murders after years of declines, and few places have witnessed a shift as precipitous as this city. The dateline is Milwaukee. With the summer not yet over, 104 people have been killed this year after 86 homicides in all of 2014. More than 30 other cities have also reported increases in violence from a year ago. And then they go through some of the data. New Orleans, Baltimore, Washington, St. Louis. I mean, there's been a 76% increase in the murder rate in Milwaukee at this point of 2015 as compared to this point of 2014. A 60% increase in Baltimore, 60 in St. Louis, 56 in Baltimore, 44 in Washington. And the story, which quotes a lot of policing experts, says that there's not a consensus as to why this is the case. But there's this paragraph that I thought was interesting. Among some experts and rank-and-file officers, and if you're in law enforcement, I'm really hoping you will call and shed light one way or the other on this issue. Among some experts and rank-and-file officers, the notion that less aggressive policing has emboldened criminals, known as the Ferguson effect, in some circles is a popular theory for the uptick in violence. And some talk about New York City, where de Blasio has been at odds with the police. You remember the police turning their back at police funerals in de Blasio's presence. And some say that law enforcement officers, not intending to cause a spike in crime, but for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that they no longer feel safe in aggressive policing. And that because of a lack of aggressive policing, criminals are escalating their violence and taking it up to the level of murder. The equilibrium has changed between police and officers, said Alfred Bloomstein, a professor and criminologist at Hines College, Carnegie Mellon University. Others, it says, doubt the theory or say that the data has not yet emerged enough to prove it. Richard Rosenfeld, a criminologist from the University of Missouri, St. Louis, said homicides in St. Louis, for instance, had already begun an arc upward in 2014 before a white police officer killed an unarmed teenager, Michael Brown, in nearby Ferguson. Less debated is the sense among police officers that more young people are settling their disputes with guns. Call me and tell me your gut as to whether the so-called Ferguson effect is behind this spike in the murder rate across the country in the major cities that I've identified. I'm at this number, 855-486-1776, in particular if you're in law enforcement. I'd love to hear your reaction as to what lies behind a sharp rise in murder in many U.S. cities? Is it because police are not being, for whatever reason, as aggressive as they had been in the past? Call me at 855-486-1776, and let's get the calls rolling. Have you heard about DISH's intense national scrutiny of the use of force by police has made officers less aggressive and emboldened criminals, though many experts dispute that theory? Do you think that's what's going on out there? All of this scrutiny, the video, the different cases that we've talked about, week in, week out, there's a new one. In fact, a new one just popped up on my computer screen this morning about someone having been shot, quote-unquote, with their hands up. Does all this scrutiny, has all this scrutiny impacted the aggressiveness of policing in a way now that criminals are in control of streets that they previously were not? Nick, what do you think? You're in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Is there a Ferguson effect out there?
I absolutely do, actually. I saw that article in the New York Times. That was one of the first things I thought about, is that what we saw in Baltimore, especially Ferguson as well, it just seems kind of, it just seems very obvious that police are really on edge lately.
And not willing to use force in a way that they previously would have.
You know, I should get pain pay for having to listen to all this bullshit to put a show together, because it drives me absolutely crazy. I mean, you know what's going on here. They're not going to say black, Negro, nigger, black gang member. No, they're not going to do it. Almost no place in the news will you hear that. So, but when a white guy or a white cop does anything and it's black involved, the whole roof falls in. And then they sit there and say, we can't figure out this rising murder rate. We just can't figure this out. Donald Trump is not even telling us. And Metzger, you know, you can't listen to that guy. He's a goddamn white supremacist, and they all lie. Actually, this is good for us. The more the truth is not spoken, the more dangerous and the more people will die. It's that simple. If you don't want to talk about drugs and the influence of drugs on mentally unstable people, if you don't want to talk about other reasons, like training people for the military to kill everybody and send them overseas and let them kick the doors into people's houses and wipe out the family, or even if you don't, you're trained to do it, and then you come back and you probably never even owned a gun in your life. And if you forget about the TV and the games, the NWO and all this, Out of Compton, this movie, nothing but pure gang violent crap, is way up on the top of the movie making list in the country. And then they're going to say, I wonder why. I can't understand that. I've gone to my pastor and I've asked him about, Pastor, what's it all about? Well, these people are just not worshiping the Lord enough. They're not getting down on their knees and praying to God. If they would do that and, you know, say they're Christians and take the vow, well, then this stuff would quit. But, Pastor, a good share of these people that are doing the murdering are wearing crosses around their neck. What the hell is that all about? So, the black KKK is really on the rise. And I appreciate the New York Times talking about it, because there's still millions of white people out there, even though they're too gutless to say anything. They know what's going on. They know it's a disproportionate black crime rate. You know, there's white people out there killing people, but not to the degree of the percentage of the blacks. So a lot of them say, well, they're killing black people, so who cares? No. Well, yeah, who cares? We shouldn't care, because when whites are gunned down and savaged and ripped apart and raped and had chemicals poured on them and everything else, we don't get upset. Ah, that's just one nigger. The rest of them are okay. I don't know. My daughter's going out with one. He's a big football player. He's going to make a lot of money someday. He said he'd buy me a new Mercedes. My daughter just worships that big, tall stud. So that's the way it goes, boys and girls. Now, if you don't like my good news, you're going to have to turn to some other source, because my good news is their bad news. Trump's still way up high, but you got this Dr. Carson, is it? Damn nigger, the nigger doctor who's never done anything in politics. He's up there almost with Trump. And you know what that is? You know what it is. It's the fundamentalist Christians are falling all over themselves to support him, because he said some things they liked. Yeah, that's what's going on. And there's a lot of racial things going on in Iowa, too, that people are talking about. Well, anyhow, on with the show. Too, whenever I play something like that, I just play. They always say, many experts say. Always many experts say. And you notice how all the experts he quoted were Jews? Every one he quoted were Jews. University professors and stuff like that. And of course, along with that, many more experts that they don't have names, they're just experts. Yeah. Well, any guy with a half a brain down on the street corner pumping gas could probably tell you, and if nobody's watching or listening, what do you think all this crime's about, Harry? Why, it's the goddamn niggers, of course. Everybody knows that. Well, how come these politicians don't talk about it? How come they don't talk about who's doing the killing on the radio? And why, and they tend not to show many pictures of these guys that are killing people. Why is that, Harry? Why, you know why, Tom. It's the goddamn Jewish media. And the politicians are afraid of the Jew media. Well, Harry, do you think the cops are going to get, you know, there looks like they're backing down a little bit. Do you think the cops are going to turn around and become maybe more violent since they're more in fear for their lives? It's a goddamn truth, man. Tom, they're going to do it. These cops, they're going to get pissed. Either get pissed or get out, because if they don't do something, they're going to be dead meat. They're going to be dead meat. They've got to figure a way of eliminating these people without having it on camera. Yeah. Okay, Harry, you keep pumping gas. You're the smartest guy I know in this neighborhood. Bye, Tom. I'll be back in a few days there, Harry. And you can update me on the real news, okay? All right, Tom. Well, remember, we're under the Patriot Act. Yeah, we're under the Patriot Act. Don't you feel a lot safer when you walk through L.A. or Chicago or Detroit? I'll bet you do. You feel a lot safer. Well, now they've changed it. Now they got the Freedom Act. Yeah, it's going to be the Freedom Act. Now, everything really shitty they come up with, they put a name on it like freedom or liberty or love your neighbor or something. So even Paul from Kentucky is supporting this Freedom Act, and I'm afraid to read it. But it's all good for us, because it's going to cause more problems, and things will get a lot more violent, and your job is just stay out of the way. Let the Ku Klux Klan go out there and fight them in the streets. Yeah. Like I told some guys yesterday on the internet, I said, here's the way I look at it. Sam Houston down there in Texas, right after the Alamo, he had his small army, and he moved north for a long way. In fact, he was looking for a place to turn and fight Santana. And he had troops actually almost rebel on him that thought he was a coward. He wouldn't stand and fight, you know. It's a lot like a right wing, you know. Go right out there, guns a-blazing, you know, instead of thinking it over and doing it intelligently. But anyhow, Sam Houston finally, they come to San Jacinto there in Texas. And he looked around and he looked at the terrain and all the boys had something to eat and something to drink. And he said, boys, this is the place. And that's where they stood and defeated Santana. And Santana snuck away dressed as a woman. But they caught him later. But anyhow, that's what I'm preaching. Let the right-wing nutcases fight prematurely, turn around and think they're going to straighten it out. Well, we continue to our San Jacinto, which is going to be a while. And when we find that San Jacinto, and it's the right year and the right time and the right situation, then's the time to turn around and fight, but not as an army, but as a guerrilla force. Yeah, guerrilla warfare is the only way to fly. The only thing about guerrilla warfare, it's going to take you years and years to do it. You might have to struggle for 10 or 20 years, like the Vietnamese were prepared to do, or like a lot of countries, even the Castro's Cubans. They were prepared to stay up in those mountains for as long as it took, but they were able to, due to the United States pulling the rug out from under that crooked Batista, they were able to move in fast. Normally, Castro would have been up in those Sierra Madre for maybe 10 years, maybe 20 years before he gained enough strength, or usually you have to depend on the other side becoming more and more corrupt. And that's what I've depended on. I'm looking forward to more and more corruption in the U.S. government and the military-industrial complex. More wars all over the place. More weapons being made. Bigger airplanes. Bigger ships. And till gradually, hey, man, we ain't got no more money. Well, hell, just print it out on that printing press. The goddamn printing press is broke. Uh-oh. We're in trouble now, baby. But anyhow, Trump's doing a good job of agitating. You know, like the black, what was that black leader's name? I forget right now, but he used to say, agitate, agitate, agitate. That's what I say. Agitate, agitate, agitate. Put out glaring racist material when you can. I mean, drives all the Christians and the crazies and the blacks and everybody else crazy, especially whites. The whites get more excited than the blacks. Blacks expect it. Blacks know how much of the white race feel, even though they know they're cowards to do anything. But you drop a racist pamphlet like the Klan does in a upper-class white neighborhood, and the shit hits a fan like you wouldn't believe. They're going to have the FBI, the CIA, local cops, and the vigilantes out there. Everybody's going to be out there. Yeah, that's the way it works. So that part, what the Klan does, is probably good because it causes fear in the minds of these people. However, I don't think the Klan's nearly as fearful as it could be. No, they're not. Not like the old days. Not even like when I was running a Klan, or when the White Knights were running a Klan. Klansmen now, you know, they take time off from watching football and beer parties, and once in a while put out a truckload of material. But that's about it. Oh yeah, they got to burn a cross once in a while, or light a cross. But that's about it for the Klan. But they still, they give reasons for, or excuses for niggers to get violent. That's one thing good about even a few dumb Klansmen. They give the niggers more of an excuse to get violent and kill each other and other people. So anyhow, that's all good. That's all good. What I'm going to play you now is a short clip of the kind of politicians we have here in Indiana. This guy is phonier than a $3 bill, or maybe a $5 bill. I've been at his meetings a couple of times, listening to him speak, but he's going to retire. But now, listen to what he says here.
By 110 people, the Cancer Care Fund assists patients with expenses such as... Indiana is calling on President Barack Obama to unite the country. Tom Franklin explains.
Senator Dan Coats wants to declare that all lives matter. In fact, Coats points out that Obama declared that he would be a uniter-in-chief when he originally campaigned to be president in 2008. Coats feels that the country has become more fractured since Obama took office and is calling on Obama to lead our country toward unity and healing. President Obama hasn't commented on the execution-style killing in Houston, but has instead garnered headlines for changing the name of a mountain in Alaska.
Well, this senator's Dan Coats. He's an old retread. He was in, and then he was out, and he's back in again. Now he says he's going to retire. Now, let's face it, the biggest reason... They do hate Obama. There's no doubt about that. And most of it is racial. Don't let them shit you. But he's calling on Obama to reunite the country. Well, I'm sorry, but the Republicans are the ones who work the hardest to disunite it. So these guys are so full of bullshit that Dan Coats is telling Obama to reunite the country. Well, Obama can't reunite the country because it's still disintegrating. And of course, it's not all his fault either, but those Republicans that will call you the nastiest names in the world are the same Republicans that behind closed doors are racist and racist as hell. Yeah. But out in the open, when they give their Chamber of Commerce speeches, honey, we got to get rid of these white supremacists. They're all over the place. I know, we got one right over here in Warsaw. He calls himself Terrible Tommy. And he says bad things about our friends, the niggers. Now, we want those niggers to vote for us this time instead of the Democrats. That ain't going to happen, baby. Even the blacks are smart enough to see through the Republicans. By the way, did you hear that story about the guy? I think it was in L.A. that was at the airport, and he reached down and picked up a $20 bill somebody lost on the floor, and he went out and bought two tickets to the lottery, and he won $1 million. I think he was a white guy. I haven't seen his picture, but... That's good luck for the guy. But anyhow, he says now he's going to start intermittently putting $20 bills on the ground all over town. So, well, that's an interesting experience. However, the problem is he better put it down fast and get out of there because he'll get mobbed by all the niggers and the Mexicans.
That's my 20, man. Get off that 20. That's mine. Oh, it's mine. It's mine. It's mine. Jose, say it's mine.
Did you know one in every five niggers works for the government? You wonder how they got all those cushy jobs, don't you? And how you didn't get them. And that's what amazes me about white men, especially white men, but white women are even worse. They just moved over and said, take my job. Pardon me, Mr. White Man, I want your job. Okay, Bat Rastus, I'll just move over here into the poverty line and you take my job. So they just, every time, and these people that are always crying about letting all the migrants in, they're going to end up getting free education and taking your job. Okay, every migrant that gets a decent job, a white man loses his job. I can't understand why I'm unemployed, Mabel. I can't pay the electric bill or buy gas for my car. I worked for that outfit for 20 years, 25 years. Well, Herman, what happened? Well, this brown fellow came in, and he evidently was smarter than me, so they gave him my job. Oh, he was just looking for a better way of life. Oh, okay, Mabel. If that's what it was, it's okay. I'll sit here and eat TV dinners and watch football. Boy, I'm telling you, if you tune into some of these progressive radio talk show guys, they go absolutely, totally out of their minds about Fox TV. Well, Fox TV is just entertainment. It's not meant to give news. It's not even a news program. It's entertainment. And then he was griping about putting the good-looking women on there. Well, at least I can get something out of the news with their titties hanging out and their long legs shaking them at me. Wait, that gal on the Five, I'll tell you, she's a sex machine. So anyhow, at least we get some entertainment out of these damn things. But these progressives just... And Trump, he's Hitler incarnate. That guy, Trump, is just like Hitler. Well, I'm afraid he's a few points of IQ lower than Hitler. Hitler had a high IQ. I don't think Trump has that high an IQ. In fact, all the leaders of the Third Reich had an IQ about 30 points ahead of anybody in this country that was in the White House or in British government or Russia. That's for sure. That is the truth. You can take it to the bank. Just remember, white America wants to be entertained. They don't want to be responsible for anything. Of course Fox TV is what they watch, because it's entertainment. And they're going to keep watching it. And the progressives, if they can't come up with something to match it, they're going to continue to fail. Even though a lot of the progressives do put out some good stuff. Yes, they do. And cover more facts and figures, but it's all wasted on white people. There may be a few watching MSNBC, but then you got to deal with the right Reverend Al Sharpton that makes that channel look even worse than Fox. Now, here's a sample of a popular progressive radio show announcer. He is funny as hell. And it's just like I say. They could look at a nigger standing over the body of a white woman on the ground with 10 slugs into her and say, well, he was just a mentally handicapped individual. And I don't know what race he was. He seemed to be a little darker than the average white Aryan, but I couldn't really tell what his race was.
He wouldn't have had one. And we still don't know the details of how he got this gun. We're still waiting for that. But it's clear we've got to do something about gun violence. And Andy Parker, the father of Allison Parker, called out politicians for being cowards and being in the pocket of the NRA.
Her life was cut short. She had so much potential, and it's senseless that her life and Adam's life were taken by a crazy person with a gun. And if I have to be the John Walsh of gun control, and I'm for the Second Amendment, but there has to be a way to force politicians that are cowards and in the pockets of the NRA to come to grips and make sense, have sensible laws so that crazy people can't get guns. Yeah. It can't be that hard. And yet, politicians from the local level to the state level to the national level, they sidestep the issue. They kick the can down the road. This can't happen anymore. And I know that the NRA, their position is going to be, I can hear it now, they're going to say, oh, gee, well, if they were carrying, this never would have happened. I got news for you. If Allison or Adam had been carrying an AK-47 strapped around their waist, it wouldn't have made any difference. They couldn't have seen this thing coming. So, I don't want to hear that argument from the NRA, and you know that's going to happen. And I'm going to take it on. I got a call from Governor McAuliffe yesterday, and I told him exactly what my plan was. If I have to be a crusader on this...
Another moron. Well, of course, at the spur of the moment, they couldn't have done anything with a gun, but they worked with the guy. They knew he was nuts. He'd been fired from different places. He'd charged people with all kinds of stuff, and he was upset. He thought they were racist, and they probably were in some ways, but they knew this guy, this nigger, was a problem. So if you're working with somebody that you think, especially a nigger, is going to may go crazy, you either better get another job or get him out of there, and get him way out of there. So this father is the stupid one. Well, we gotta get the NRA for this because it's going to keep going like this, and you know, in the mornings these 45s are going to jump out of the drawers of the houses and they're going to waddle out to the street and jump into the hands of a nigger, and then that gun is going to lead that nigger to a victim, and he's going to pull the trigger. No, he'll automatically pull the trigger, and they're dead. But this poor nigger, his granddaddy was a slave. Wait a minute. His great-great-great-granddaddy was a slave. So you can't really blame him. And remember, Jesus loves these people. And we've been so bad to them. We took them out of the fucking jungle. Stopped them from being eaten by lions and tigers. And circled around by anacondas and all that kind of stuff. We brought them over here, which we shouldn't have done. I'm all for leaving niggers in Africa to get eaten by lions. I mean, the lions haven't had it so good for a long time. But once they're here, they managed them like animals, which unfortunately they probably had to do. And they got cruel and all that kind of stuff. But instead of stopping this thing and sending them back to their happy hunting grounds, they kept them. And so we fought a civil war where, what, 200,000 or 300,000, maybe 600,000, I don't know, white men died over slavery. It was really over northern capitalism versus southern agrarian capitalism, but it was, the irritating part was slavery. So even at the end of the war, when they knew niggers were nothing but trouble, but they were cheap labor for the big boys. Even at the end, when they could have shipped them all back to Africa. In fact, before the war even got started, they could have indemnified. There was more spent in 1 week in the Civil War than all the money it could have taken to pay the slave owners a high price for the slave and send them back to Africa. So we got nobody to blame but ourselves. Our race is fucked up. And now unless we get unfucked, we're still fucked. But you're not, and I'm not, because we know what's going on. We just sit back and say, bring it on, Fox TV. Reverend Al Sharpton, come on, baby. I love it. A white man is a bad man. He is bad to the black people, and he's going to have to indemnify us with millions and trillions of dollars. Well, I'll go along with that like I said 20 years ago. I said, sure, we'll indemnify the blacks. But first, we're going to take it from the billionaires for what the whites lost out because of being nosed out by black labor. All the white loss in wages by white men, loss of jobs by white men, that's got to be paid back to the white man first. And if there's any left, we'll dole it out to the niggers, and maybe enough for a couple of six-packs. I hope the progressives get their wish that they're, when there's no guns around, or at least not too many. I want to see the panic on these progressives in their rich neighborhoods, and these Jews in Hollywood and these Brentwood people and all that, and when there's no guns around. Wait a minute. Oh, I know. Metzger's selling machetes. Okay, there we go. TT has got a sale on machetes. That'll solve the problem real quick. Well, this is a few days old, but it's sort of funny because Duke came out being a big supporter of Trump. The right wing is all totally predictable. They're always predictable. And then he comes out a few days later and says, after Trump says, oh, I don't want this support of David Duke. He's a Klansman. And then David Duke comes out in a couple days and says, well, I really don't endorse him. but I sort of like what he says. Oh, we like Trump because he's going to stir up more racism that's been around in a long time. He's doing more than the KKK could ever do right now. Yeah, other than that, we could give a shit less about Trump.
Right. They, David Duke clarified on his personal website that he has not officially endorsed Trump. Instead, said that he supports his stance on immigration. And Duke isn't the only white supremacist to support Trump's views. According to BuzzFeed, at least 8 top figures involved in the white nationalist movement favor Trump for president. Jared Taylor, who runs the racist publication American Renaissance, calls Donald Trump the nation's last chance. Taylor wrote, quote, if Mr. Trump loses, this could be the last chance whites have to vote for a president who could actually do something useful for them and for their country. By useful, of course, he means preventing whites from becoming a minority, which I don't know how Trump's going to do that. Anyway, Trump may not be looking for the endorsements of these people, but he definitely seems to have the endorsement. He said, quote, a lot of people like me. Republicans like me. Liberals like me. Everybody likes me. Which is what I was just saying. That's the reality. Now, we hardcore leftist progressives or social democrats, whatever you want to call us, we look at all this and we just go, oh my effing God, are you kidding me? What? Really? Duh. No. Can't be. Oh my, what's happening? And we can sit here and do that as long as you want to. It doesn't matter. I unless something really horrific, unless somebody gets information that Trump really did make a move on his daughter Ivanka, and you'll understand what I'm saying in the third hour when I quote what he said, a couple of things that he said about his daughter. Unless that proves to be more than just Trump talking a trash talk, this guy is going to get the Republican nomination. You don't agree with that, do you?
Well, the Europeans, especially the white Europeans, they can't figure it out either. Just can't figure it out. We got millions of these people come across that pond, and we can't... Why, they just keep coming. Can't figure out why. Well, one reason is that the United States government, so-called corrupt war criminal government, waging war all over the place. All these countries where the people are coming from have been torn to bits by thousands of bombs from U.S. rockets and so forth, machine guns, with all that depleted uranium spread all over the Middle East. So what would you do? What would you do if you're a Syrian and you got 16 different factions trying to kill each other, blowing up everything? All the buildings are torn down, blown up. Well, what would you do? Well, of course, you'd try to get out of the way. Same way with the Iraqis and the Afghans. All of them said, shit, I got to get out of here. I'm going to die, and my whole family's going to die, so I got to do something. Well, I know Europe up there, they don't have too much crime. Nobody's bombing Europe because that's where all the capitalistas live. I'm going to build me a boat and get on out of here, and I'm going to go up there and I'll brave anything, even machine gun fire, to get out of here, man. I got to get out of here. The U.S. military industrial complex is killing us all. We can't stay here. Get on that raft, Mabel. We're out of here. Well, isn't it going to be pretty rough, honey, where we're going? Well, it can't be this rough. So there they are. They're pouring into Italy and Hungary and all these countries, and the people are going crazy. They're building big fences in Hungary. So what are they going to do? Because it's Camp of the Saints all over again. This is just like Camp of the Saints, only worse. If you haven't read the book, get it. 20 years ago they put it out, and we all thought at the time, well, that's a little extreme. I don't think it's going to get to that. Yeah. So anyhow, and these people up in Europe are saying, I can't understand these people. What the hell are they all coming up here for? Well, it might have to do with your British army and the American armies and your French armies and blowing the shit out of everything. Yeah. Trying to knock out all the leaders so they could put in their own corporate leaders. So why are things so hard to understand? So now there'll be big riots against these people coming in. That's normal too. I mean, if you're over there and here come a whole goddamn train load of Iraqis and Syrians down your street, you're going to say, what the hell? You're not going to say, Wie geht's, mein Freund, come on in. You can live at my house. Now they're trying to say people are going to have to move over in Europe and allowed a whole lot of these people to come in and got to find houses for them. Meanwhile, Europe is due for a crash, just like the United States. And you can imagine what's going to happen. You can imagine what's going to happen if an economic crash, and when an economic crash comes in Europe and the United States. You can imagine people are going to go hog wild. There's going to be mass killings. It ain't going to stop. So I guess it's going to be putting positive evolution back on track. Clean out the riffraff. Yeah. So anyhow, that's the report. You know, don't take much brains. My IQ, I don't think, is that high. I never checked it. But if I can figure it out, there's, well, at least hundreds of thousands of other people should be able to figure it out. But the difference is they won't say anything. They won't say shit if they had a mouthful. So anyhow, this is all good news for us because it's going to shake the bush. Oh, Wolf Wall Street, he used to get upset with me because I said, bring on chaos. I'm for chaos for now. Worse is better for now. He didn't think that was right. He didn't believe that. Well, I do. I believe we need chaos. Chaos in the streets. Chaos in the countryside. Chaos everything. And then we'll see how evolution really works, right? Seems fair to me. 14 words and 5 words. I have nothing to say. And come on, Fox, put more of those girls on with the long legs and the big titties. Because I want entertained. By God, they promised me in the Constitution, pursuit of happiness, and Fox News makes me happy. Yeah, baby. MSNBC is too dry, man, and that damn right Reverend Al Sharpton, God, I'd swear he's dead, but he keeps talking.
Every piece of this is man's bullshit. They call this war a cloud over the land, but they made the weather, and then they stand in the rain and say, shit, it's raining!